You're listening to Polycast, an official podcast of a Bolton Civilization site. We're talking about Civilization 4 colonization. I'm Daniel Quick, known as Dan Q on the forum, joined by Walter Schneiders, who goes by Locutus.
Hello.
Ken Furland, Impaler WRG.
Greetings.
And a number of Phyraxians. We have with us Mike Bates.
Hello.
Ed Piper.
Howdy.
Jesse Smith.
How's it going?
Dennis Shirk.
Hello from across the room.
And Kelly Gilmore.
Hello, everyone.
I saved the best for last. Kelly will remember that.
The best looking for last? Is that what you said?
I'll give you that.
Zing!
Kelly is the director of marketing at Phyraxis, and Dennis is the marketing manager at Phyraxis, and I'll let those other guys introduce themselves here in a few moments because, well, I couldn't be bothered. I'm kidding, of course. This is how it goes on this show.
Interesting.
That's a very politically correct way of putting it. Thank you, whoever said that. I don't know your voice yet.
Hi. My name's Mike Bates. I'm the art lead for Sid Meier's Civilization IV Colonization, in charge of leading the art team.
Hi, I'm Ed Piper, the design lead for Colonization. I'm in charge of design.
Pretty technical. My name's Jesse Smith. I'm the producer on Colonization.
And contrary to, I believe, has been posted on the site, we were unable to have Alex Mansaris, a well-known Polyton member and lead programmer, here. He's still on vacation.
Yeah, he's taking a well-deserved rest. Well-deserved rest.
Oh, I thought it was I scared him away again. That's good. It's good to know.
Well, it's a little bit of both.
Alex is kind of a small guy. He gets scared real easy.
Yeah, he's a little timid.
So, Mike Bates, I'm not sure why I'm telling you this, but you're a 16-year veteran in the gaming industry, and you've spent half your years at Phyraxis Games. And on Colonization, like you just said, you're the lead artist. Can you tell us a little bit more about your role and responsibilities on this project?
Well, basically, the duty of the lead artist is to set the look and feel of the game. That's more on the artistic side. The atmosphere of the game actually denotes or portrays, is it dark, scary, is it sunny, happy, that sort of thing. And then sort of the style of art that it adheres to is carried out through the game. For Colonization, the look we were after was sort of an antique, kind of a burnt sepia-looking world, like an old map or an old painting. So that's sort of a look and feel. Aside from that, the lead artist is in charge of setting up pipelines to get the assets complete. He's also supervising. It varies on project, but it can be anywhere from 5 to as many as 20 artists, checking up on them, making sure that the things that they're doing actually fit into the game. And then finally, you're responsible for the overall look of the game. So all the assets that come in must be tweaked, and they must fit together and work well together.
And to answer Wouter's sort of question at the beginning, which was, why are we telling Mike this? Well, Wouter, I was actually informing both of our listeners.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
But Mike's passed.
Yes, I am a 16-year veteran, and after that was at Microprose, and most of that period was working on simulators, tanks and helicopters and the like.
I'm afraid I probably haven't played any of those. Sorry.
Forgiven. Not everybody's cup of tea, you know.
Well, I'm also not very good, so.
Okay.
And how is that different from any other game?
Ooh, oh, man.
Don't worry, that kind of stuff is all par for the course for podcast.
Yeah.
Smack talk early in the day.
Okay, talking about Alpha Centauri. No, not that kind of stuff. kidding. Oh. Someone said that we should definitely bring up Smack during this, so I did. We can move on.
Also beginning a tenure at Phyraxis in 2005 is Ed Piper, designer on Civilization IV Colonization. Ed, what have your roles and responsibilities entailed?
That's a loaded question. Let me see. Basically, my main job is to create rule systems for the game, keep them entertaining, keep the game fun, kind of oversee the general cohesiveness of the design aspect of the game, regulate balance, make sure that things feel right, and I guess kind of task Alex with a lot of things to do for programming. Also, tasking Kenny with a lot of things to do also.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I don't task. I give it to Jesse. He can pull out what to do.
Can you give us a little bit more of the background of what you've done on previous projects as well?
Let's see. Previously, I've worked as a level designer on Beyond the Sword and on Warlords. I also worked on Civilization as a tutorial designer. I started as an associate producer at Firaxis on a contractual basis back for Civ 3 Conquests. And before that, I was a tester for Play the World on Civilization. And before that, I was a beta tester for 7 years at a outsourcing company elsewhere.
Wow.
So I've kind of been in the industry a long time, but I've been just slowly clawing my way up.
7 years is a long time to be a beta tester.
I know what that's like.
Yeah, it is, actually.
Well, Locutus, you've been like about an unpaid beta tester for how long now?
I guess if you count Activision years, going on 10 years now.
So now in his 5th year at Firaxis Games, and 11th in the industry, producer Jesse Smith has a gaming credits list that is already more than 100 titles long. His first Civ title was the second and final Civ 3 expansion, Conquest. With Civ 4 Call, what have been your roles and responsibilities? And as producer in Civ 4 Call, what has been different and what has been the same as compared to working on all previous titles that have begun with Civilization 4?
Pretty much the role of the producer is to run the project, to make sure that everybody on the team knows what's expected of them, to work with the lead artist, to come up with the visual goals, to work with the lead designer, and to come up with the design goals, what is he trying to accomplish, and then work with the lead programmer, Alex in this case, to come up with what are the technical challenges going to be to accomplish the things that Mike and Ed wanted. And then we sit down and kind of lay out the schedule, lay out what it's going to take to get there, figure out what assets we're going to need, and then just try to kind of manage that process. Near the end, it gets pretty exciting when we're working on making sure that everything's working okay and a lot of the assets are coming in. So a lot of that is just basically following up with people and making sure that people know what to do. I would say the development for Colonization has been pretty similar to the development for the other titles. We had a unique opportunity with Colonization to make it a standalone title, which was pretty exciting. So the players who loved Colonization but don't necessarily own Civilization 4, they'll be able to just load it up and play it. That allowed us to just kind of really simplify the game tremendously. The Civilization 4 engine is so solid. It's a great engine to build a game off of. The process has definitely gotten easier for us with each title that we've made, and the team has become more efficient and proficient at just creating really cool stuff. So from the enhancements that the engineering team made to the engine, to the performance increases, it's a really, really interesting opportunity for me because I love the original Colonization so much. To be able to bring it back and use such a great engine, I just jumped at the opportunity.
And you said it gets exciting as a game gets closer to completion. By exciting, do you mean insanity?
It depends. I would probably classify this title as managed insanity. When you're making an entertainment title, something as exciting as video games, it's hard not to realize that the more time you spend working on it, the better the game's going to be. Because we do work within limited time frames, you want to work on it as much as you can and get as many things into the game as possible so that it'll be the best game possible. So it does get pretty intense at the end, yeah.
I say insanity and excitement are synonymous. So.
Two ends of the same coin.
Maybe we could give a shout out to our friend Blake.
Yeah.
He's already gone off to the monastery. As people on Apolyton know, he was involved with the AI.
Yeah, so if the game's not hard enough, you can send Blake a letter at the monastery. Blake definitely deserves a shout-out. He did a great job with it. We had Frankenstein's support on this title as well, so people were playing the game and just providing a lot of feedback. He did a really good job with it.
Yeah, actually, shout-out to him, but a shout-out to everybody who helped us out with it, like all the testers. They gave great feedback. It was really appreciated across the boards. It was really, really helpful. I can't say enough.
That's a shout-out.
There you go.
That's your shout-out.
Kelly has to go now. I've given her the opportunity, if she wants to say some words out there to the dozens upon dozens of listeners that we think we might have on this show.
That many?
Well, I can say that in the nearly 9 years I've been at Paraxis, Colonization is one of the most requested games we've had from fans. I think those of you who have been writing to us relentlessly will be pretty excited when you get your hands on this game, because it's fantastic. And the team of guys you're about to talk with are incredibly talented, and they've made what we consider to be another hit title. So we're really excited to deliver it to you in September. Spoken like a marketing person.
That's right. Absolutely. Love it.
Thank you, everybody at Apolliton. Thanks, Dan. You guys are incredible. And we appreciate your continued support and love.
Aww. I'm blushing, but you can't see that over there.
So moving on to more the practical matters of the game itself, when and why did Firaxis Games decide to do a remake of Colonization?
We decided to do a remake of Colonization pretty much right after we finished Beyond the Sword, actually as we were finishing it. We just knew that we had a great opportunity. People have been asking us to make it, and there's certain times where we'll sit down and kind of analyze what are the opportunities available to us. Colonization had been something that's been requested by fans over and over and over again, as Kelly was mentioning earlier, and we were just really excited to be able to recreate this game. We started working on it pretty much immediately after we finished Beyond the Sword. I mean, the team took some time off, and then we went on a trip down to Williamsburg just to kind of get things going. Mike, Ed, and I went down there and just kind of explored the colonial town and everything. That kind of got the juices flowing. So that's pretty much how it went.
What was your design philosophy for Civilization IV Colonization? Was it to create a remake that was true to the original as possible, a sequel that expanded on the 1994 game, or a mix of both that translates the original concepts to a modern standing, i.e. the Civilization IV engine?
To be honest, we kind of wanted to go with a mix. I wanted to keep the core of the game as close as I could to the original. I wouldn't want people to be remembering back to when they had first played the game and then come in and everything's changed. The whole foundation of it being a trade game was what I really wanted to keep. Now, at the same time, I wanted to add some enhancements to make it better. An example would be the Founding Fathers. While I thought they were important to the original game, they didn't seem to shine. They kind of just sat in the background every time you got a choice every 15 turns. It made a little bonus, but you really didn't play into your strategy at all. I kind of wanted to make some of the smaller pieces of the game kind of step forward and shine a little bit more while keeping the original game whole trade aspect and foundation as solid as possible. Another important thing that I really wanted to have multiplayer be an option for the game, because there's nothing more entertaining than beating down your friends, quite honestly. So,
yeah, Ed likes stomping on me when we play multiplayer.
Yeah, he did the same to me. He's pretty brutal.
Kenny, what are you talking about? You attacked me the one time and took out my...
Well, yeah, but you weren't in the room. You know, you walked away from your terminal and I attacked your founding city. And that was kind of...
That's truly stabbing somebody in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't know I had walked away, so that's...
Yeah, you were like, I just hit the cannons and then like, oh wait, he's walking by. It's like, hey Ed, I just took your city!
I would have had revenge.
Wow. Does someone need a timeout?
I'm a little bitter. What can I say? I saw him attacking. I ran by his office so he wouldn't think I was sitting at my computer at the time. I wasn't paying attention, man.
All right, and you can look forward to that grudge match coming soon exclusively to Apolliton. And, yeah.
We're fracturing the next game.
No. For the original Civ 4, the ratio was sort of one-third old, one-third new, one-third improved. That would you say the ratio is for this game compared to the original Colonization?
Ratio? I would say it's about the same. We improved certain aspects.
I would definitely say that, I mean, about one-third, one-third, one-third. I mean, the Civ 4 engine brings a lot to the table as far as improvements to the game for new stuff. A lot of this is enhancements from the original ones, cleaning up things that didn't make sense, just making the game more fun to play. That sounds about right.
What design elements will be recognizable to those familiar with Civ 4? And similarly, then, what elements will be recognizable to those familiar with the original colonization?
I'd say the easier thing to answer is from the original colonization, you're going to recognize the whole production of resources the same, the whole converting of resources, and the whole trade system is still going to be the same. That's going to be the most recognizable system. You're also still going to be bringing over immigrants. It's still using the same religious freedom aspect of the game to produce immigrants, and you're also going to still have liberty bells to produce a rebel sentiment. The elements that are similar to Civ 4 that are recognizable from there, we brought over the interface for diplomacy. You'll be able to trade with people through that. You'll be able to enact war. One of the things that I think really shines about it is your king is going to communicate to you through the diplomacy screen. The hatred that you feel every time he taxes you is kind of animated out. You'll see him ask you to kiss his pinky ring. You'll get that, and you'll get to kind of see a lot of what I think are pretty entertaining animations along those lines.
Very entertaining.
Awesome. I guess turn the tables a little bit and ask Ken a question. You're a fellow co-host on this panel and a modcast regular. Your background in the civilization community started here on Apolloton and helped you lead to your current position as a Phyraxis intern. You've been working on the interface. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
People who have listened to Modcast have already probably got a little preview of how that works. But basically, the person doing interface has to hit a lot of bases with the lead artist, the lead designer, producer as well, since these elements have got to come along to let us test the game and play it well. It's written in Python. That's the language I'm primarily writing in. I've got to do a little bit with Alex as well to tie everything together. So as features are getting implemented, they just get made an interface for it, and we play them. And basically, I did a lot of the work on working out a layout for things, and then we rehashed those over and over again with the feedback from the team and from the playtesters as to what was good, bad, what conveyed an idea well, and what didn't. And of course, I owe all of that to Apolloton. You know, but it actually started after I was in the BTS beta. I got in contact with Alex and John Schaefer, actually, as well. And they were encouraging me to apply, and we went through this whole process. And even though I think there are a lot more experienced modders out there who could have gotten it, none of them seemed to actually be interested in moving to Baltimore. So I packed up, moved across country, and I'm over here now.
If I'd been thinking a little farther ahead, I would have set it up so that you would have had to ask that question of yourself, Ken. And it's a good thing you included that shout out to Apolloton in there, because now you can stay.
Another interesting fact is I'd actually already been approached by Dan to do the modcast before I'd actually got accepted for access. So I wanted to continue that, and I'd already made the commitment there, and Kelly approved it, blessed it.
Awesome.
And she's been cool with it ever since.
We have an insider. Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry.
A spy in our midst.
Yep.
What espionage mission will you have
to do? Oh. Poison water. No.
Just what I was thinking.
Wait, I've been drinking the water.
Plant virus.
Woo! We got that on tape, Kenny. Just so you know, buddy.
Okay. Moving on to gameplay, what are the chief gameplay differences between the original colonization and Civilization IV colonization?
I think one of the most noticeable changes a lot of people are going to see is the combat system has changed more over to a Civ IV combat base. The original colonization was a little bit, I guess, outdated, the original combat system, and we already had what I thought was a pretty good combat system in Civ IV that we could really make some changes with. So we kind of took little parts out of the original colonization, such as the natives getting a better bonus versus on their land, and your motherland's forces not really having any sort of defensive bonuses on your land. And we kind of brought that over to the whole colonization, and just to make it a little bit more interesting, a little bit more fun, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I can attest to that original colonization's combat system being a little wonky sometimes. Like, I would lose a 16-power frigate to a 4-power caravel.
You know? Yeah.
Like, what the?
Okay. It's almost like losing a tank to a spearman.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Did I say that? I'm sorry.
Random number generator.
We're trying to weed that stuff out.
Yeah.
Have you added any new buildings or resources in Civ 4 colonization over the original, or tweaked how the existing ones work?
We did add in a ranch and a rancher to kind of allow the production of horses. So that's the only one. The other ones we've just kind of brought directly over. We've tweaked what's required to build them. We no longer have a founding father required to build your tier 3 buildings. It's more just on what's required. You'll find a lumber mill is required for your tier 3 buildings now, and need to have one of those in your city if you try to get to any high level, and find it works pretty well in the gameplay.
There are also new tile improvements now in the form of a lodge.
There is a lodge. When we were going for tile improvements, we didn't really want to go with the Civ 4 idea of kind of each improvement improves one specific resource or such. We came up with a farm, mine, lodge. Lodge will improve, say, it's lumber, furs. I think that's it for lodge. I don't know why it's escaping me. Yeah, and you have your farms for any of your, like, sugar, tobacco.
The trapper and the lumberjack.
Yeah. And the mine would be for your silver or so on. It's pretty self-explanatory. It's just a real simple method for figuring out what you want to build and going with it.
I think I saw in a screenshot that schools actually produce books now. Is that right, or did I misinterpret that?
It's education. It's pretty much the same as it was, except, well, you're no longer putting who you want to be training.
Oh, cool.
In there, you're going to put who you want trained. You put that in, and then at the end, once that person has learned enough, it's going to give you what he would most likely have learned. You can then pay gold to say, no, I didn't really want him to become, let's say you have a bunch of fishermen in the village, he most likely will become a fisherman. You can then pay gold and say, no, I really wanted him to get an education from the blacksmith to make him become a blacksmith.
Yeah, there's no randomness to it anymore now. That's the nice part.
Random a lot of times in my mind equals evil.
So some previews mentioned that there would be a third tier of sort of super specialists beyond the regular master cotton planters, etc. Is this true? And if so, how will this work? How does one acquire these specialists?
The vicious lie. if it is in there, I haven't heard of it. Everybody else in the room's looking a little blank. No, there's still the idea that you can make any one of your citizens can work as a specific trade, but a specialist is going to be the tradesman that does best at that trade.
I suspect that it was from someone who didn't actually play the original and might not have understood exactly how the system worked.
Yeah, I got the same impression from reading that article. They were kind of talking about how anyone can plant cotton, but then there's a above guy who makes it better. And fans misinterpreted that as being a third tier because they already knew about the first two tiers.
And it was very poorly worded as well, so I figured I would clear it up just in case.
Yeah.
And so what article was that? So we can flog them some more?
Well, I wouldn't say so much the misinterpretation was in the article. It was just not worded, and then people on a polyton drew a little too much from that.
Well, I was kind of confused by it, and I was fairly certain that it would be false, but I don't know.
Never hurts to ask.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no reason you couldn't mod in your own guys who were super-duper specialists. A feature that makes colonization almost unique among strategy games is the absence of a technology tree. Will the new game have one? If so, will the speed and direction of research be controlled by the colony or by the mother country? If the colony has a say in research, will this reduce the heavy focus on economic development that characterized the original game?
That was a question from Varicosis.
That was one of the things I kind of wanted to add in right off.
No.
All right, never mind. Well, there's not necessarily a tech tree, but the use of founding fathers you can kind of set up to say it's like a limited linear tech tree. They kind of take the place, even though there's not a definite requirement. It's as close to as a tech tree as you're going to get in colonization, really. The idea of researching towards something was more what I was going for. So you do kind of have a tech tree, just not a traditional one, I guess. Instead of taking, I don't know, research and going through a civ tech tree, you're taking your political points or your religious points and you're going through a religious tech tree to kind of get these founding fathers and prove your nation that way.
So it works pretty much like in the original then, or is it different?
Well, let's just skip right into the next question. If Founding Fathers are unique like World Wonders, and the chance of getting anyone is dependent on your colony's focus on a particular area of expertise, as Jesse has explained in earlier interviews, trade, military, etc., is it at all possible to target a particular Founding Father by the way in which I play, or can I only increase my chance of getting any of a particular category, also by a varicosis?
I guess it'll be just easy to explain that way. Each Founding Father has a cost in so many points that they're going to require. You have about, I think, 11 religious Founding Fathers. We'll just take them for example. Each one kind of costs a little bit more depending on just according to who he is. As you accumulate enough to get one of the Founding Fathers, you can either choose to accept him into it, or you can keep your points and keep accruing and try to get to the next guy. There's kind of a strategy, you know, hey, I'll take anybody I can get, because the little improvements will eventually add up to a bigger improvement. Or you can say, I want Lewis and Clark. I'm going to hold out until I get Lewis and Clark, all the way at the end of the tree. You can try to get him, and as long as you are focusing all your efforts towards it, you probably will, but it's a lot like getting a wonder. You have to rush to try to get him, and if somebody gets him before you, you still have your points, and you can spend them on somebody else if you'd like.
So you don't have to get Lewis and Clark as like the 11th guy on the tech tree, so to speak. Do you have to get first all the 10 previous guys, or can you go directly for Lewis and Clark then?
You can go directly for him. You can skip everyone along the way, but you're going to be making a sacrifice by doing that because he costs so much. By the time you get to him, everybody's going to have maybe 3 Founding Fathers each, and they will be getting bonuses. But you will get this bigger bonus at the end of the tree, and maybe for how you're playing, it's worth it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and how if you don't get the particular Founding Father, then you can apply that to somebody else. You'll lose it. Like, if you're building a wonder in Civ 4, well,
yeah,
someone beat you to it. Ugh. We've come across in recent previews claims that colonies can now expand to cover multiple tiles as they grow larger. If this is true, how does it work exactly, and what benefits does this offer?
Just to kind of touch on that, what we originally decided to do, Mike pretty much decided that he thought that the city should be bigger, that they should be spread out a little bit more, take a little bit more room. So what happens is the artwork covers multiple tiles. What you can do is when you enter the city, then you can kind of see what tiles are adjacent and what they're producing and yielding and such. But the actual city will spread out and kind of cover over them. So it looks really cool because you get these big cities that are spread out, and then you can really see the details on the buildings and the pop buildings, and, you know, the city's just, it really makes a much more interesting character on the map. But functionally speaking, it doesn't really mean anything. It's more a visual thing. But if a player wants to still be able to see what those tiles are producing without having to go into the city screen, they can just turn on the yield indicators, and then they can see what they're outputting.
Oh, okay. So it's all about the shiny. Okay.
Yes.
Shiny good.
So is there a limit to how far they can spread?
Yeah, they will pretty much only cover the 9 tiles surrounding them.
Okay.
And they really won't cover much of the 9 tiles. They'll just cover like...
the 8.
Yeah.
A farm out there.
Yeah. They'll just stick into the tiles a little bit. Kind of like if you got up to a really big city in Civ, they kind of creeped over a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
And if you have a city and there's, say, a native settlement right beside it, then the city is trying to expand, obviously, then it wouldn't be able to expand into the...
No.
Okay.
Can you explain how religion factors into the game? Is it like Civilization IV religion system, or original colonization system, or a combination of both?
The big thing is we don't have religion in the same way that Civilization IV did. It's very similar to the original colonization. So you'll generate immigration through promoting religious freedom. You can do that by building churches, by building cathedrals in your cities, and then setting preachers to work those if you can afford them. As you generate religious freedom, people will start showing up on the docks in Europe, and then you can transport them back. For the most part, it works identically to the original game.
Yeah, it's identical to the original colonization. I didn't see any real improvement by adding, you know, a Protestant, Catholic, different variations on Catholicism into the game.
So, how does the new constitution feature work? What kind of amendments, or whatever they will be called, are available, and how do they affect the final stages of the game?
The constitution appears when you decide that you're going to break off from your motherland. originally started just like a flavor idea, and we wanted to kind of make it feel like you're really beginning something new. And I was trying to think of how do civics affect the player, and I figured, well, you're attached to your motherland. You really don't have many choices as far as your civics. And then once you break off, now you have this vast amount of decisions. Unfortunately, in order for them to be entertaining, they have to affect the game right then, and pretty much all that's going to happen around that time is you're going to get attacked by your motherland and you need to defend. So pretty much all of the different choices you make have some sort of direct effect on the combat aspect of the game. To give you ideas on what those choices are, it's like the right to bear arms, your stance on natives, whether you believe in manifest destiny or the rights to the natives that they control their land, the separation of church and state, all of these kind of tie in to really affect how you're going to handle the war.
Okay. So can you give an example? For example, a separation of church and state, what kind of effect would that have in game?
I think I recall the actual high-level choice is called stance on religion, and the two choices were theocracy and then separation of church and state. Theocracy would convert all the crosses generated from the rest of the game into Liberty Bells.
Oh.
Because at that point, you can no longer get immigrants. So that's in the original, your priests were useless. I would just send them off to fight. Now they can still serve a purpose. The other one, theocracy, would give you those crosses converted all into hammers, so they could be turned into like cannons and things. So it's a very interesting way of using a resource that was useless at normal colonization.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
I think the best way to describe it would be like you get a founding father level. It's as big as having a founding father, but you get to choose between them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ken. Love this man.
Diplomacy involving any combination of natives, fellow governors of other colonial powers, and, of course, one's own king. How extensive are these elements, and how do they compare to the original colonization? Previews seem to indicate that the various aboriginal tribes behave more like fully functional civilizations this time around.
Diplomacy, I mean, it works very similar to Civilization IV, so each of the native tribes has a full leaderhead that you can interact with, trade with, kind of deal with. The interactions with your king is the same way. You can kind of contact him and ask him for military forces. He will sell them to you at extortionist pricing. But the interactions with the natives is really interesting. The art team spent a lot of time creating really unique tribes. There's 8 different tribes that you can encounter. The art just looks fantastic. Mike and those guys did a great job on them. It's always great, actually, with those guys to find a couple tribes that are on an island and then sell them lots of guns and horses. Or if they're near your neighbor, like another colony, you can go ahead and sell them that stuff. It's pretty interesting.
Before, it never felt like you were ever at peace in the original colonization with the natives. They could raid you at any time, and you really never knew how to kind of have a revenge. You couldn't really go to war with them, necessarily. There was sort of that option, but it wasn't as cut and dry. The natives don't have borders, and they don't recognize your borders at any time, but they won't just do raids on you in general. They will have a solid, our nation is going to war with you, which kind of adds a little bit of a more defined feel to them.
Watch out for Montezuma, he'll come for you.
But one thing that really allows is you can build up a real allegiance. A lot of times when I play, I like to have certain natives as my allies, and if I see that they're going good, I will trade guns to them, I will trade horses to them, and pretty much equip them, and I'll even make packs with them, protection packs, so
yeah, that's awesome.
You can kind of use them as your friends, sort of like the Canadians did at the time. Well, not Canadians at the time, but like Montreal did.
I take it then that alert levels for individual settlements and trading with individual settlements, that's gone now, that's now all taking place on a sort of tribe-wide level?
Well, no. Any direct trade to a settlement, you need to take your resources to that settlement. That settlement will then possibly purchase it off of you, depending on what you need. Each settlement actually will have a little icon to show what they need, what they're willing to trade with you. So you can look at your map, you can go, oh, they want furs. We'll take furs to them, or they really want guns. Actually, a lot of people really want guns early on, you'll find out. So you can take guns to them if they need them, and they'll buy them for a good price. But there's kind of a double-sided option there, is you'll get really good money for selling guns to natives early on. But then again, you've just given natives who may or may not be your friends the ability to blow you up. So it's kind of a interesting little choice you can make there. Really scary if you give Montezuma a lot of guns, actually.
He'll pay good money for them, though.
Okay. But at least we won't need that pencil and paper anymore to track every single individual tribe and what they need and what they train and all that sort of stuff.
Nope. That's the one thing I really wanted, is just to be able to look and see who needs stuff and where you want to take it.
Yeah, that would be my number one request as well. So it would be awesome to see that in the game.
Yeah, this is a really nice bit of interface. We were brainstorming it, and like, when we hit it, it was like, oh, yes. You know the thing where you can view your resources and colonization? You just hit that button and zoom out?
Oh, okay.
Same thing now, but you see what the city wants.
That's awesome.
So it's perfect.
And training specialists by the Indians, it works the same way, or...
Yep.
Okay.
Option to see what they train you for.
Awesome.
There's even a bar to show you how long it's going to be until they finish.
Okay, so it actually takes time now, then.
Yeah, it does take time. The main reason is, I believe there's a limiter on the original where you could train one guy at any location.
Yeah, I was never sure how that worked. Sometimes you could train only one, and sometimes it seemed that it was infinite.
Yeah, and that limiter was taken off, so we figured depending on the type of person training, we'll tell you how long it'll take. Free colonists train the fastest, and everybody else a little bit slower, kind of like a school.
Of course, you don't have to put that on pen and paper anymore, but you can if you still want to.
Feel free.
No, thank you. Done that more than enough.
You want a pen instead? I think we can arrange that.
One other feature, the natives each have their own traits now that are unique to them, so they're not all the same.
The traits that they have not only give them a bonus, but also give you a bonus to how you interact with them. Like, to give you an idea, the Aztecs, actually, when you conquer their cities, they have more gold. So their traits actually work to give you bonuses, depending on how you want to interact with the natives.
Ken, you stole my question. You can go now.
According to some previews, colonial powers have more than one leader, that even within the same power, their leaders have varying traits. Are these categories mix and match, a la Civ 4 leaders?
No, each of the traits are new traits that we've created. You will get two leaders per colony, and the traits are just bonuses to kind of give you a flavor. Like, if you like playing as England, you'll get the option of George Washington and John Adams. Each one has their own thing. George Washington's kind of more geared towards fighting a war with a less amount of guns, while John Adams is definitely a political-based founding father, able to give you a bonus on
Liberty Bells.
Liberty Bells, yeah. But in addition, each of them have a trait to kind of shows that they are England. England will get a bonus to the amount of religious freedom that they're giving it, so that bonus is given both to George Washington and John Adams to kind of give the English defined flavor, and then there is a flavor depending on which founding father you choose.
So these sort of leader-specific traits here are unique for each leader? It's not that sort of George Washington and Peter Stuyvenant sort of share the same traits?
Oh, no. Each of them is completely unique.
If they're in the same colony, then they share a trait.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's sort of the national trait. Okay.
Yeah.
So what was the rationale for not including other nations like Portugal in the game? Can you see adding them as downloadable content or in an expansion? And if so, what nations besides Portugal would you like to add if you had the opportunity?
Well, we pretty much decided right from the beginning to just stick with four colonies. So Portugal, unfortunately, didn't make the cut. I think part of it is just that by providing the modding tools and everything that people need to create content, that they'll be able to add whatever content they would like to the game.
Yeah, I am almost positive you will see Portugal as an option the day it comes out. Somebody, you guys will have that up right away. So,
in fact, my friends in the mod community who are beta testers are already sending me screenshots of their Portugal mod.
Perfect.
He's like, wow, cool, man. You know, it's like...
One of the things it came down to was just also development. I mean, quite honestly, I hadn't thought about adding Portugal in at the time. And I see it as a valuable thing to have in, but...
The window had closed.
So I guess,
yeah.
Yes.
What is the reasoning behind reducing the game length to a mere 300 turns? Will the game feature game speed options, as in Civ 4? For example, quick, epic, marathon?
Originally, we put it to 300 turns just because I think 300 turns should be right. Let's play it and see how it is. As we neared the end of the game, it felt like we were getting everything done by 300 turns. Also, added a little bit of an excitement factor to also have a clock ticking away against you. So So that's pretty much the reason.
Yeah, there are game speed options that you can choose. You can do a slower game or a faster game.
Our turn counts for the quick, epic, and marathon. Healer 300, the quick 225, and the epic 450. And there is an entry for marathon, but it's set at 900. Maybe we have that turned off, though. I'm not sure. It's in the XML file, at least, though.
That's a bit extreme, though I'm sure it will have its fans.
It's called marathon for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you get 1 month every turn.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
There are mods out there for Civ 4 that go even further than a marathon. I think that's just crazy, but it has its fans. So I'm sure someone will play it.
If people want to play that, that's them.
Exactly.
You could have for Civ 4 colonization, 24.
Yeah, exactly.
What set of conflicts did you have to resolve between historical accuracy and enjoyable gameplay, and how did you resolve them?
I'm sure there are a lot of minor things, but nothing amazing is popping into my mind.
I mean, I guess we could have gone overboard with a lot of the stuff, made it more and more detailed. Get out 50 resources that you could collect and stuff like that. I mean, they probably collected more types of resources and created more goods than what we're actually including in the game.
There was the slavery.
That's true. Pretty much less slavery out of the game.
Right, that's pretty obvious enough.
It's hard to kind of put in things that people consider extremely bad and things that were extremely bad and still make the game fun. It's,
sensitive issue.
Yeah, I don't want to...
Pirates kind of glosses over a lot of what pirates do. It's that sort of idea.
Yeah.
Gopal asks, some parts of colonization, like the training of colonists or trading, involved a lot of micromanagement. What, if any, automation options will be present in Civ 4 Coal? Guess we addressed that a little bit.
You don't really even have to micromanage the city at all. The AI can do it for you. Unfortunately, it might not do exactly what you want. It'll do what it thinks is best. But maybe you're looking over and seeing a native that really wants to trade for cloth or something, and you're not producing cloth. The AI is looking to enhance how much gold you would make from your motherland most of the time. You would probably be able to make more through this trade, so you can go in and specialize it for what you want. In the end, I think the novice will do well enough letting the AI control, but I think the more experienced, skilled players will gain more from kind of handling it on their own. It's a trade-off. Depending on how I feel when I play, I go between both.
There's a couple other cool things that were added, too. You can set emphasis in your city, so you can actually go into it and emphasize particular items, like if you really want to emphasize cotton, so that you can set a city to focus on specific types of resources, like sugar or cotton or whatever. So that's pretty cool. You can also de-emphasize things, so if you don't want your city to focus on food, if you don't want it to focus on ore or different things like that, so the AI kind of has general guidelines for what it should be doing. The automated trade route system, you can set export and imports for each of your cities, and then just automate your supply vehicles, like the supply wagon train, or your ships. You can automate them, and they'll just take whatever's available for import-export and just transport it between the cities. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we can thank Kenny
for implementing the interface for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the screen that you can manage all that from. Oh, and one other thing, you can sell to Europe automatically as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is much nicer than...
It drives the prices down there.
Yep.
So I guess we're moving into combat. How does Civilization IV Colonization's combat system work? Does the game use Civ 4 mechanics for this, including the promotion system and the like? And did you maintain the original call feature that units that lose a battle are captured and or demoted to regular colonists? If not, why not?
We did use the Civ 4 mechanic. It does have a promotion system. Other than the combat promotion, have all been changed. As for the change to whether the units that lose battle are captured or demoted, it currently does not demote. It will just kill.
Okay.
Yep. There's also a change to how that kind of overlays this. If somebody's attacking, let's say you have a city and you don't have anybody outside of the city, it would automatically, if you have guns in the city, will grab a guy, give him guns, and let him defend your city. As long as you have guns, it would keep pulling him up and letting him defend.
It's great because then your cities are all defended, basically. And all you need is guns in your city, and your city's protected. You don't actually have to have guys standing outside of it.
And as for why it was changed, it was just a decision we made early on, just to limit the amount of micromanagement and such.
Are siege units present in Civilization IV Colonization? And if so, how do they compare to their operation in Civilization IV?
The siege units are still around, but we have removed the collateral damage off of them. We were finding collateral damage was
way too powerful.
Yeah, pretty overpowered in the game, and we were finding...
Gee, that's something I've never heard before.
Yeah, that...
Imagine that!
So, we took that out. They still will destroy defenses, and they are still great for blowing down fortresses and such, but they are not kind of the end-all stat killer anymore.
Cool. So in the original colonization, combat was arguably fairly broken. Infantry was weaker than cavalry in absolutely every way, and cavalry was far inferior to artillery. What have you done to address this in a new game?
The game is stuck more with rock, paper, scissors. Cavalry will get a significant bonus against your artillery. Your artillery is going to get a significant bonus against your infantry, and your infantry will get a bonus towards your cavalry. Finding the correct unit to attack with is kind of the option that we went with. You add in promotions to kind of give them advantages on different types of land and such, and you can kind of get highly specialized units to try to figure out a counter for whatever your opponent's bringing at you.
I guess the unit types are all still the same? You didn't add new units or anything like that?
No, they're still the same, yes. I think there's a native unit type. One of the founding fathers, I believe it's all of Spain, has a bonus versus native troops. So there is a native troop marker.
Okay. I think the original had that as well. But...
Isn't there also the king basically gets a beefier, more powerful version of the stuff so that his troops are always superior to yours?
Yeah, his troops are more powerful when they come over, but they receive no defensive bonuses for terrain at all. In the end game, I was real fearful that people were just going to try to bunker down in their cities and just sit there and in turn, and that doesn't seem like an epic ending to what I'm hoping is a really fun game. What I want is for people to get out and try fighting. I want your entire nation to be a battlefield. Since the motherland's coming over, they don't quite understand the land. They don't know where are good places to fight. That's your opportunity to go out and get them. It's going to be real hard for anybody to not lose a city, but they need to be able to accept losses and try to take it back. Wait for them to go out over open places. You raid them from the hills, attack them from forests. Use your land to your advantage and kind of try to outflank, go around behind them once they've moved out. Just a lot of different options once you kind of get to that in battle.
Yeah, I can definitely attest to that. If you just try to bunker down in your cities Civ 4 style, you will definitely lose.
And even that discussion reminds me a bit what Sid had talked about in some interviews about Civilization Revolution. How people would just kind of sit there and they wouldn't want to explore the map, so it gave them reason to do that.
Exactly. And as for exploring the map in colonization, you still get to talk to chief, and exploration early on gets you a lot of exploration leaders, and that's really a nice bonus early on.
The Fountain of Eternal Youth still in there?
It is not.
Oh. Damn it, it was so powerful.
Those were a little too good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, ooh, you suddenly got 12 immigrants on the dock. It's like, oh, you know. Like,
a little too good for our own good.
Yeah. Mod number 2, right after Portugal.
Yep.
So other than not underestimating it, I'd say, what of naval combat? What elements does it borrow from Civ 4, original colonization, or otherwise?
One of the interesting things that we brought in is early on we just went with the basic Civ idea. You go and fight and one dies. We began noticing that the later you got into the game, the more horrible of an effect that is. When you have a limited amount of ships, it's real easy to destroy all your ships. So we gave an upgrade. If you have a shipyard in any of your cities, there is an escape percentage that your ships will survive and go back to a shipyard. This allows you to still have that survivability, but makes combat still important to try to either guard your ships or not. And especially when Kenny decides to attack me with his privateers, and I will get revenge.
Let everyone know, the privateers are the new super units.
Privateers are definitely a powerful jump. I think you're going to see a lot of people try to grab them early on. I think it's definitely something should be feared.
But if they're privateers, how do you know it's Ken?
You don't.
Oh, because Jesse's smarter than to try to attack me with the private ear.
Yep.
Awkward.
Let's move on to graphics. I guess this is more Mike's question.
Yes.
Was there a specific art style that you were striving for in Civilization IV Colonization? Already its water texture improvements over Civilization IV, as evidenced by screenshots alone, are being lauded by the community. Were the graphics apparent Civilization IV internals or more incidental?
Well, to answer the first question, I've worked on Civ IV titles ever since Civ II. I've worked on all the expansions and so on. There are things that I've always wanted to change about the game, having looked at it for that long. Generally, it feels like, for the most part, it's in sort of a tropical environment, the original game. Everything's very bright, very light-colored, that sort of thing, very blue water. So when I think of that period of time that colonization is in, I think of sort of a darker and more mysterious time. The colors got much darker and very much richer than you'll find in the Civ IV series. I wanted that element of mystery in there. And also, if you look at it, I was also trying to look at old paintings of the era and try to create that. So in the screenshots, you'll see it. Hopefully it does look sort of like an older painting. Part of the system for building the world, as a lot of people know, it pretty much stayed the same as far as the way the grids work, the way the tiles work, and that sort of thing. That's the similarity between the core game and colonization. I got to say thanks to Jason Winokur, who wrote a lot of the new graphics code. He did a fantastic job on that, and I worked hand-in-hand with him, and together we were actually able to make some really nice upgrades. And the engine is just, I can't tell you enough, it's completely overhauled. It's not just a matter of changing textures and so on. It's really brought up to a contemporary level. So when people mod this game, I think they'll be very happy. They're going to have a really contemporary-looking game. A lot of the things in there are actually state-of-the-art. I think our water shader in particular looks very nice, and I haven't seen a better one out there, really. Also, we have advanced lighting. There's actually light bloom and things like that on the terrain. And we have a really kick-ass shadow algorithm implemented in there. So with those things, it's definitely an up-to-date engine.
Awesome.
Nice.
It's a trade game. A lot of the trade takes place on the sea, so I thought the water was super important. I also thought that the ships were super important, so we really went over all the ships with a fine-tooth comb. And in general, the graphics, if you look at it, a lot of the texture map resolution is quadrupled from the original Civ game. I wanted the player to zoom in as far as they could, and when they did, there would be a reward there. You actually see the detail at that level.
Wow, awesome.
That was the concern. I really wanted to put detail into the game as well. I thought that was necessary.
It looks really awesome. It worked out quite well based on the screenshots we've seen so far.
Thank you.
I don't think the screenshots do it justice, actually. I think you'd like it even better.
I suspected as much.
So you're not concerned about people just staring at the game and not actually playing it?
Well, my job is to make sure they stare at the game and enjoy what they see. So, you know, they'll get over that, I guess.
Success is measured by drooly keyboards.
If that happens, Mike will be happy and I'll be sad. So.
That's right. Steal your thunder.
The Civ IV colonization colony screen is already being criticized by some fans for being bland and having buildings that are hard to differentiate from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Curiously, the concept art for some of the buildings that has been publicized does seem to have some color in them, but it seems to be missing in the in-game screens. And what was the rationale behind the design of the screen and the look and feel, and what is your response to this criticism?
Okay. That screen is really intensely intricate as far as the parts that are on the screen and the buttons that go on there and the functionality of it. It's a very busy screen. So the idea was to have the buildings look like they were drawn on a piece of parchment and have them sort of fade into the background a little bit, just have them monochromatic, and then have the things that you're moving around, the colonists and the tradesmen, have those be in full color, and that way they'll come off the map better and be more visible. If I put a colored colonist on top of a colored building, it might be confusing. That was the rationale behind that. I tended to keep the color where it would do the most good. Your goods and things like that are colored, and the actual units are colored, but not the map.
Yeah, and I'll put in my side of why that screen is so intricate. In the original game, you had that little, obviously the resolution is much smaller in the original, and that colony screen compressed and hid a lot of information from you. You couldn't view the quantity of a little yield icon being dragged around. You didn't get a numerical output of your resources very well. So we've done a couple things that help to understand what's going on the city screen. For one, the locations of the buildings are constant. So once you've played the game for 5 minutes, you know that building up in the upper middle of the screen is the church, for example. And it's also got a large cross under it. So you're not going to need to look at that church thing very long at all.
There is a small learning curve as far as identifying the buildings, but the buildings that we have on that map were actually cel-shaded versions of the actual 3D buildings in the game. So yeah, you'll learn those pretty quick and identify them, I think.
And I think another good thing, like that contrast between the paper parchment and the people make, is that everything is draggable in that. So if you just kind of make them blend in, it doesn't look like you should be pulling that off of there. And that's something that you really...
Right, the colored bits are draggable. The non-colored bits stay where they are.
And I think it really enhances that and it makes it a lot easier for the newer player to grasp.
Yeah, that was definitely when I first heard that you were going to do a remake, I was immediately like, oh my god, how are they going to handle the colony screen? That's so impossible.
Well, what we did was a bit of a tip of the hat to the original one as far as the layout and just having drawings of your buildings up there. It's a little quaint touch.
Yeah, but Mike and Kenny made it a wonderful screen. Since it's one of the things that you're going to be looking at the most, you definitely get all the information you need. So I'm really proud of that screen, actually.
Yeah, it's easily half the interface work since it's the largest file in the interface.
Call us if you have any feedback.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-21-288-7659. That's 441-21-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at polycast@polton.net. For more information on Polycast, our sibling show Modcast, or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.polton.net.
Miscellaneous questions. Civilization IV Colonization is said to be considerably marvel by those who play it. What details can be provided at this time, including interoperability between Civilization IV, i.e. map scripts, design, and ones that can be used in others?
If there's any inoperability, it was unintentional.
The one inoperability that you're going to get is you need to have a motherland area specified on the tiles.
Yeah, but I don't think the maps will load up. It's going to be different. I mean, you'll basically have to adjust all the XML and everything and all the references in the text file for the map script. You'd have to update it to work with colonization. So colonization stuff can only work in colonization.
That's true. The folders and the formats are pretty similar, though. There's a terrain folder with terrain items in there, textures and so on. They sort of work the same way, but they're not interchangeable. The two engines are not really interchangeable.
Yeah, but the amount of changing that a modder would have to do, I would say, is not too huge. I think you could probably get it done within an hour or two.
Yeah, and if they've modded Civ 4, they can understand how colonization is put together pretty quickly.
Yeah, indeed. If I recall, Alex has exposed some more of the features that were in Civ 4, their equivalent into the DLL here. For example, diplomacy screen being more moddable in colonization than it was in Civilization 4, which was a stumbling block for a lot of people when they wanted to do particular mods in Civ 4.
So that was definitely something that he added. The moddability, we wanted to continue with what worked with Civ 4. I mean, the DLL is fully there. The AI is available for modification. You can use the world builder to add maps or to create maps. So all that stuff's possible. And the DLL is actually included with the release of the game, so you're not going to have to download it. It'll be in there when you install it.
What was the most difficult part of colonization to program and also to design? Was there something memorable in the game's design or gameplay that was added, modified, or removed as a result of, I don't know, programming or design practicalities?
The one of the things that we didn't put in was we had actually worked a little bit on using the event system. There were a couple ideas. We decided to kind of take it out halfway along. It seems like you're always doing something in colonization. You have a lot to take care of as it is, and it seems like a little bit more than it really needed at the time. It was more a thing of frightening off new players. An event system, I think, would be really good once everybody's into the game and used to it and kind of got a feel for how the events kind of come in and make it a brand new game all of a sudden. But as was from a design aspect, since Alex isn't here, that would be, I would say, something that we kind of pulled back from.
Did you ever play the original colonization, especially at the time? And if so, when? And did you go back to play it in preparation for the sequel? Sort of already touched on that, but...
Not I.
I played it a little bit, not at release, but a little bit after, probably about 2 years after it came out. I definitely, when we started moving towards it, I went back, opened it up, replayed through it multiple times. So, yeah.
Yeah, I had the same experience. I mean, I played it in 95, quite a bit, actually. I actually ended up playing Colonization more than I played Civilization. So I was really into it, really interested in it. And then we started making it, definitely like dove back in just to get a feel for a reminder of what the original game was like.
I was at MicroProse when it was being made. I remember that.
Wow.
The big player is Alex, though.
Yeah, Alex.
Alex still has it on his computer. I mean, he's got like 2 games on there for all time, and that's one of them.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, he's got like that and Civ 4, that's it. No shooters, no nothing.
Now, me, I played through one game when we got here. It took a long time. And I totally maxed it out. I built, like, the most colonies you could get up to the cap and then conquered all the other European powers before finally going into the revolution. So I was like, okay, I know this game.
That's impressive.
It was only easy, though.
Easy? That's true. So how many turns was the game, Kenny? You should have found out. It was 900 turns.
9,000 turns. I'm still playing.
I mean, come on, Ken. You've had like minutes upon minutes to research it since we brought this up last. I mean, what have you been doing all this time? This also a question by Varicosis. The music selection for Civ 4 was very well received. Please tell us about the music in Civ 4 Colonization.
Well, the music is, we licensed some pieces. We kind of kept focused around the colonial era. We focused basically around that time period. Some of the cool, interesting new music that we were able to create is with the Native American tribes. Michael Curran and Mark Kramer, the audio engineers on the project, they met with a group of Native Americans and recorded. They had a powwow, basically, and just jammed out.
Huge drum session. It was really impressive.
And a real flute player.
Yep. So it was all authentic Native American music. That was really cool to be able to do that.
It reminded me of some stuff people added to Civ 4 for ancient era music.
Yeah, I love our music guys. They're great.
I think the music guys actually were starting the game off and starting the early phases of the game more with Native sounding music, and then towards the end more colonial instrumental type symphony type music. You know, it got more sophisticated as it went on.
Yeah, and it definitely builds towards the end for a big battle, so I think it's a good selection. I think you guys are going to really like it if you like the original Civilization music.
If you're listening to this, you've had the chance to listen to some excerpts from the theme to Civilization IV Colonization. World exclusive.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah.
First time ever.
Awesome.
Depending on the commercial success of Civilization IV, could other arenas of the so-called Age of Discovery be next to be covered under the Civilization IV umbrella?
That's interesting.
At this time, no, we're not really planning anything, but the possibility is always out there. So.
Yeah. Although, I have heard interesting ideas from people around here that I would never rule it out. I definitely wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, pretty much for Axis, a constant, never-ending stream of good ideas. At least in our own minds.
Yeah, Kenny's been coming to the design meeting, so somebody always has something in their mind.
He keeps going to the meetings even though he's not invited. Other than perhaps this special, have any of you listened to Polycast in the past? And would you be willing to appear on the show again?
Polycast? What's that?
Polycast.
I've never heard a podcast. What show are we on?
Oh, what's going on?
Wait, this is being recorded?
I think I've
listened to parts of it. Yeah. I don't know what specific episodes.
Yeah, I have two little parts here and there.
Would girls playing Sif be being in
that? I just look to see if you said my name, and if not, I go through it. So, you say my name more often, maybe I'll listen. No, I would definitely be willing to be on it.
Yeah,
again, I've had a good time, actually.
I'd be willing.
It's been really fun.
Yeah. Even though this was one of the worst times I ever had. But, yeah, I'll do it again.
Why, thank you.
I'm into that sort of thing.
He likes bad times.
Yeah, I like pain. It's good.
You work in the gaming industry, of course you like pain.
That's all from us with our focus on Civilization IV Colonization, a standalone title based in the Civ 4 engine, here on Polycast, an official podcast of a bolt of the Civilization site. A goodbye and thanks to Mike Bates, Ed Piper, Jesse Smith, Dennis Shirk, and Kelly Gilmore and Firaxis for their participation, and to Wouter Locutus Schneiders and Ken Baylor WRG Ferlin from our sibling show, The Modcast, for guesting with me.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our game. Yeah.
Thank you very much, sir, for your time. It's been awesome. We really, really appreciate
it. Great talking with you.
I suppose everyone wants me to do the countdown.
Naturally.
1,999. Okay, that's a regular joke.
You're still doing that.
Dennis.
What?
Did you really make my Skype name?
It was already taken.
Right, because I already have an account. Nice.
It's echo across the intercom there. Should we mute these phones in case
you
get more calls like that? How do you do that again?
That's a good question. You could just unplug the thing from the back of the phone and then...
Bingo.
You could throw the phone against the wall, Ken, but some people might not like that.
Not like anyone calls me anyway.
Aww.
Poor Kenny.
Dan, I just wanted to ask you, how do you want to do the questions? Do you want to ask them all? Do you want me, you, Wouter, to alternate or something like this?
I was thinking I'd ask all the questions, and you and Wouter can say nothing. Yep.
Okay. So did they lose recording or something? Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Oh, is Kelly still connected?
Yeah, I am. I'm still here. I'm in a different location.
Okay, so you're in your room, Dennis is in... Okay, so everyone in Dennis's room is offline right now.
Yeah, something must have happened.
Hello.
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 Yeah.
There they are.
Right.
There we go.
Okay.
You're back.
So which one dropped the mic?
I blame Jesse. It was my fault.
Nah.
That's too bad. I was looking forward to saying, well, Kelly, you got about 15 minutes. We got about 30-some-odd questions you got to get through. Ooh.
I can handle them.
Neither Ed or Jesse waited for my prompt. Interesting.
Oh, I jumped ahead. I'm sorry. I was excited.
Okay, who was asking the next question?
That would be you.
You know him very well.
Okay. I'm not answering it until I know how to pronounce his name.
Diplomacy involving any combination of NATOs.
NATOs.
NATOs, yeah.
Done.
Okay.
Don't really have a good answer for that one.
And Jesse was worried.
Maybe you're looking over and seeing a native that really wants to trade for blankets or something, and you're not producing blankets because it's cloth. I'm sorry, cloth.
said, oh, I think I might have to try to learn to dance to the theme song. And then Kelly said she wanted a video of it. And I'm like,
yeah.
I just had these thoughts of it being projected in the Firaxis.
Yeah. No, it will be on YouTube. We've got a really, really large television. A really, really large television.
Nice Irish jig.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than, oh, great, I have 5,000 production to put into library crap.
Yeah. Library crap, huh?
Man,
that's a new building.
That's, yeah.
Crap house.
We edit that out.
Sure, I can edit it out, or I'll just have you repeat it a dozen times.
So oh, man. Yeah, there's no telling what I'm going to be saying at the end of this.
Record date, August 6th, 2008. Sounds copyright Civilization IV, Warlords Beyond the Sword, and Civilization IV, Colonization. Copyright 2008, Bolton Civilization site at bolton.net.